This is the Transmission Times, radio diaries during COVID-19.
I was just thinking the other day that maybe we should go live off the grid or go to some island somewhere and go live in the wilderness. I just have so much doubt now about what my freedoms are. People say, oh, you know, free speech, or, you know, it's a free country, you know, and you can do what you want. And that's true when it comes down to it. But I think that social freedom, the freedom of choice without judgment, I don't know if that exists in the way that I used to believe it existed. But I don't feel free to choose anymore. And not just because the people around me don't necessarily agree with my choices, but also because every choice comes with this cost or a variety of costs. And I don't necessarily always know what those costs are going to be.
I think to defend your personal liberty and not be willing to sacrifice that for the sake of others, that doesn't jive well with me. I don't like that mentality. At the same time, if the God of the universe can give us free will to make our own decisions, then why should the government feel like they can tell me what to do or what not to do? And honestly, just saying those words makes me mad because I've just never thought of myself as that kind of a person. You know, the government this or the government that. So these are just all new feelings. I'm trying not to judge myself for feeling them and rather just feeling them, saying them, and trying to process them.
I measure time by the passing of the eras at work. First, the slow closing, the cessation of programming, and then that week where everything speeded up so fast that it was clear that we were not going to be open at the end of the week. And we had no idea at the beginning of the week that that would be so.
One of the things that strikes me from the early days of the pandemic, when the news was coming in rapidly, my son had come home from college and my husband and son and I were sitting around the table after a meal and we were considering, is it worth it, risking all of our health to maybe go to the grocery store and stock up a little bit? Everybody was talking about coming home from the grocery store and being exhausted and not being able to figure out why. And it wasn't long after I'd made several trips and I realized why. One, I wasn't getting energy back from other people because people weren't even looking at you because it was hard to see you behind the mask. And the other was, I noticed for myself that my eyes were very wide open. I think with a couple other of my senses shut down with the mask over my mouth, I was using my eyes more to see, and I realized I was quite exhausted when I left. My eyes had been wide open for the entire shopping trip.
There was the shutdown where we all tried to work at home. There was the extension of the shutdown where we were asked to come into an empty building and work. There was the curbside era when we brought materials out to the front door and tried to serve people in a way that seemed very unusual and foreign. And then there was the reopening as we stressed and feared for our very lives and have now, a month later, begun to relax and understand that if we were careful, we were safe, and so was everyone around us.
My son, at dinner yesterday, was saying, can he give his friends high fives, or does he have to sanitize his hands afterwards? Then he was talking about putting something in a drawer, and he said, well, I guess if you close the drawer, then you can just hand sanitize afterwards. And it's like, is this what we're creating in these kids? That every single thing you touch, you then have to sanitize your hands? I don't want that for my children. I feel so helpless. And as a parent, it's one of the worst feelings you can feel is helpless, because your entire being is devoted to your children and to their safety and their health.
So for the last 2 months, life has felt very heavy because I feel like we're all sitting on the doorsteps of communism and only George Orwell and I know it. And he's dead, so I'm pretty much all alone. And I've been feeling very alone, and it's scary and it's terrifying. And this thought that like people will so quickly turn over their freedoms and mine in exchange for what they think is security.
I read an article that was like, most coronavirus cases come from small family gatherings. And, you know, the writer was saying, so please, guys, let's just get through this and then you can see your family. Oh my goodness, like, I've never heard something more awful. When are we going to get over this? And what's the cost? If it is our families, that's not okay. That's too expensive. There has to be a balance, you know, but it's very much stepping on the toes of my freedom. And I don't know, because I'm all about sacrificing too for the sake of others. But at what point is it just now you're not sacrificing for others, you're just conforming to this new normal? And I don't know the answer to that. All I can do is rebel in my small ways and continue to teach my kids in our house and help them with their anxiety and say, it's okay. It's okay. You're not going to spread coronavirus because you touched the drawer at school. It's okay. Even if you do, it's okay.
I measure time by how many books I've read. I measure time by the growth of the grandbaby, who before this pandemic is over, will have his first birthday. I measure time by the things I haven't done that I meant to do. I measure time by the things that I'll never get to do that are gone forever. I measure time by the time I haven't been around my family.
My mother lives 500 miles away in Maryland, and when there was question about doing interstate driving, I realized, my goodness, we're set up here, both with this pending election that we don't know how that will turn out, and COVID, and maybe heading back into a COVID winter. And I just called her and I was crying and I said, I think you're too far away now. And she said, I think so too. And we have since found her a condo up here and she's put her house on the market and we're in the process of moving her up here. She'll arrive in late October. It's all part of the mass migration. Our buyer's agent was explaining that something like 10% of Americans have moved during COVID, which is alarmingly high. So I don't think we're the only ones that have realized we need to get to where we need to be. We can't count on the fact that it's all going to work out okay at a distance anymore. You can't just hop on a flight and get down to Maryland.
I applied to university. And I wanted to study psychology. Going to this university has been something that I thought about. This is the fourth time I seriously thought of applying, and it's the second time I applied. The first one was when I finished high school and I didn't get in. And the thought of waiting another year for the pandemic to maybe be over, yeah, it's It's a price I'm not willing to pay. So, yeah, I'm probably gonna become a student again at 34 in a pandemic. I have no idea how it will look like.
We've been thinking about having a street party. And I thought, you know, maybe we could go ahead and do that. The weather is cooling off in Arizona. It's really like the perfect time to be outside. It's really nice. And we could just set up like a table out front and have a potluck. And we'll just sit outside. Everybody could stay as distanced as they want to be. And we'll just do a small one, like maybe the four houses on our side of the street and the four houses across the street. And so I was texting with my one neighbor that I do know, and we started discussing the details. I said, potluck, and he said, well, I guess that'd be okay if everybody brought their own utensils, or... And I started thinking about having the serving spoon and people being paranoid about people breathing in the food, and... Oh, I just was so disappointed. I thought... I guess we can't, you know. And what if somebody reports us, you know, calls the police on us? I'm so sad. Like, our lives are just so wrecked. And it's funny because I never had a street party before, but now I'm all sad because I can't have a street party. You know? But it's because of being locked down that I realize how important it is to know what's going on with people.
My grandchildren returned to school last Monday. They were so excited to be back. On Friday evening, my granddaughter developed a cold and a fever. So until they can get a test to make sure she doesn't have COVID, the whole family has to isolate for 14 days. I fear this is going to be a regular occurrence.
On Tuesday morning, I painted 6 large drawings of Pepper as she laid on the floor sleeping. It felt like a ritual. We took a last walk in the woods and she swam for the first time in her life. The vet came over at 4 and I held Pepper close as he gave her the final shot. He helped me dig a grave in the yard, and we buried her in her blanket with her last stuffed animal and scattered ashes of my late husband and our dog, Radar. It has been a rough week. My dog was almost 16 years old, so we'd been through a lot of life and death together. The house is so hollow and quiet, the sound of the washing machine gives me a weird solace. In a new way, I am more aware of the pandemic than ever. Living alone in the upcoming winter when we will have to be isolated inside our houses again for long periods of time. Although I can't replace her, it would be a good idea to find a new dog soon. I've been looking at rescue dog profiles on the internet, but my heart isn't in it.
With a constantly changing situation with COVID in the UK, from today we can meet with a maximum of 6 people. My eldest has a significant birthday in October, and there is now no way that we can celebrate together. So it would be a split celebration with 2 groups of 6 on different days and outside. Let's hope the weather is kind.
I have a 5-year-old and a 4-year-old, and they were kind of just joking about the coronavirus in a kind of a sing-song childlike way, and I just felt a chill at first, but then I also thought back to Ring Around the Rosie, which, you know, is another incidence where children made up a sing-song rhyme about a deadly disease, and it kind of just stopped me for a moment to think that there may be some child right now somewhere making up a sing-song rhyme about the coronavirus. And will children be singing that in 50 years?
When I read or thought about something like a global pandemic in the past, I would have expected total chaos and, you know, kind of a scenario of bring out your dead of the plague days in Europe in the 16th and 17th century.
We remember early on the day that the first freezer trailers were delivered to each hospital. You began to see it. You began to see these ramps being set up outside the hospitals so that they could wheel bodies up into the freezer trailers. One of the most astonishing sights we would ever see is over by Industry City, which was the staging ground for all these trailers. And when we actually got a peek behind the curtain there, which was pretty much an enclosed fence of a very large area, I'm going to say probably, I don't know, 10-acre site, maybe more. It was wall-to-wall freezer trailers, wall-to-wall. And then we got a closer look to get a look at the signs. And it was, you know, one sign was funeral directors to the left, medical examiner this way, or hearses this way. You know, we'd always remind each other that this could be us. It could be us.
Nothing I've read except possibly some dystopian novels. And even those haven't really prepared me for this. I just didn't expect ever for it to be so kind of invisible. Because my life is so unchanged, even though the world is experiencing something that on this level globally so fast we've never experienced.
So I think what I've noticed in myself, the people I've heard of or know or read about who are young people, usually they're all okay now. Some had lighter forms, some had more severe forms, but they all kind of pulled through and they're okay. And for me, that made me a bit more relaxed about the idea of catching the virus. But I think it depends on the experiences you hear about, because my mom's friend heard the opposite of people dying and people being hospitalized and it being way worse than she imagined. So now she adjusts her perspective according to what she heard. Again, I realize how we're not rational beings, but more emotional ones, and we don't think statistically, we generalize a lot, we base a lot of beliefs on what we know, even though that might be an exception or false information. It's the way we function.
I don't think I will ever find masks normal. Maybe it's because I'm a painter and I can't separate the vision of all these mask-wearing shoppers and city strollers from the feeling that we are living in a dystopian movie and all of this can't possibly really be for real. So I tend to limit going out in public. At home, when I get caught up in painting or writing or working on grant applications, I can make a shift and live in a fictional world where the pandemic doesn't actually exist.
The school is creating this culture of fear. And I'm sure, I don't think that our school is the only one in that. It's everything is fear. Everything is fear. I personally don't want to live in fear. Because I could. And I would be in a corner, just rocking back and forth like a crazy person. Like, that's where I would be if I let myself live in fear. We cannot live in fear. But the school, it's like, oh my goodness, even if your kid thinks about sneezing, they will be basically expelled from the school and never allowed to return. That's not the protocol, so I'm exaggerating. But that's the sentiment as a parent. You're like, oh my goodness, like, I got to make sure that these kids are extra healthy, extra safe and protected, because otherwise, forget it. The alarms are going to start sounding and there's going to be just like
flashes of red everywhere and the police is going to come and escort you to the school because you can't get there fast enough to pick up your kid. Even if it's not explicitly said, it's this undertone, this just like low grade anxiety everywhere you turn, everywhere.
The way I perceive it is that the pandemic is chipping away at us, changing each of us in ways we can't possibly notice yet, except in tiny ways. I notice it when I see someone I haven't seen in 3 or 4 months. Often he or she simply looks different in some way. I notice it in myself. I'm not as patient. I'm on an edge. And if something negative happens, something that in life before COVID I had the strength to deal with, okay, I tumble. I get back up, but the edge is still right there, right next to me.
I am worried about the consolidation of money and power. What small businesses can withstand the kind of pounding that they are getting now if whatever they offer is not something pandemic-driven? Will the corporations consolidate their hold on everyone, and will we be forced to engage with money and power in ways that will be harder for us to escape from?
So it's my husband's birthday, and what he wanted for his birthday this year was to participate in a peace vigil for International Peace Week. Yesterday was International Day of Peace. One of the biggest war industries is one of the largest employers in my area. So we are standing in front of Raytheon early in the morning as people are arriving to work holding signs against war. We made our own signs. My husband said, "The ends disprove the means." And mine says, "Which comes first, weapons or war?" And we're standing out here just letting these people know that, you know, we don't hate them, but this is not good. You know, I don't know that we would have done this if it wasn't for this whole COVID thing. You know, like, there's so much government overreach right now that we really feel strongly that people need to start speaking up.
I'm hoping that there are some set of plans put in place that will help to lead us in the right direction, not in the wrong direction. Because from this year, 2020 has been a year that we can see that was totally unprepared, unexpected, and things kind of got out of hand. People lost respect for each other. People lost respect for the police. People lost respect for people in politics and government. People should be able to prepare themselves for the future and not be so called dependent on certain things that we need. We should be able to self-sustain off the land. What I learned about this was that everything comes from overseas. So this is something that in the future, say if another pandemic does happen, we should be prepared.
Actually, I think there's going to be another pandemic much sooner than that. I think it's going to be much sooner than 100 years. I would tell people to just calm down. Just calm down. Look at the data that was collected during this time, which it's still being collected. We're still learning so much about this virus. You know, every virus is going to have its own distinct set of issues and complications. Just know that it's going to take time to collect data and to just calm down and don't force it. You can't rush Mother Nature.
I have been thinking about what might unite the people of the United States again. Previous to the pandemic, I would have said something just like this would be it. Something that would happen that would be out of the control of everyone, that required great sacrifice, creativity, adaptation, and consideration, and that involved great suffering and death of our friends and neighbors. But here we are, and we are not united.
I truly believe that a deadline would create unity. A deadline keeps everyone focused. It keeps everyone on track. Everyone has the same goal in mind. Everyone can bear through the tough times because they know that it will end. But with coronavirus, it's so subjective right now. It's so endless, right? What's the end date here? Is it a medical victory that we're looking for? A biological victory? Political victory? What's the goal here? And so we can't unite around this adversity because there's no victory at the end of this. It's so ambiguous. It's foggy. No one can define for us what success would be. And so every single day, it's just us with the wheels completely fallen off. We don't know what success is. We just feel like failures, and nobody's on the same page.
I wonder if we all were to face our national disgrace, our racial discrimination that goes on unchecked after 400 years, I wonder if we could ever get to the point where we would all agree it was time to fix this vile infection, as Ruth Bader Ginsburg said. I wonder if that would do it. I think it would, but I don't have any hope that we're ready to do that.
I'd like to say a huge thank you to Tony, John, Sandy, Karen, Christina, Brianna, Kate, Amanda, Britta, Anna, Diane, and Sue, whose voices are coming to you from Maine, New York, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, Arizona, Illinois, Romania, and the UK. Since the beginning of lockdown, the Transmission Times has been collecting audio diaries from people around the world. But there are many stories we haven't heard, and if yours is one of them, we'd love to hear from you. Please send us your stories of something that has been awkward during this pandemic. You can do that in one of two ways. You can record on your smartphone using an app like Voice Memos and email it to us at transmissiontimes@gmail.com, or you can call our phone number 847-354-4163 and leave a voicemail. Thank you. The Transmission Times is created by me, Katie Semro. Swim.